You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
We're back on Fantasy Sports Today. Mike Blewett, K-Dubs, Kevin Walsh. We're going to bring Joe Lisi in here in a minute. We're talking NFL Draft. I want to preview the NFL Draft mock draft special that's going to happen this Wednesday. We're going to air live from 5 to 8. That'll be on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, and we'll be on Fantasy Sports Radio. It'll air after that on the radio because we've got Gabe Morency's show, Sports Rage, Red Heat and Rage with Cam Stewart. That'll be live from 4 to 6. Then we'll probably air after that. So it'll run a few times over the course of the next couple of weeks as we head up to the draft. We'll be doing draft coverage live here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network the eve of the draft and subsequent stuff. And the reason that we're doing all this content is we have great guys like Joe Lisi, who joins us on the phone. Joe can be found on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. He's a college football analyst here on Fantasy Sports TV, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. He hosts College Football Today during the college football season, which can be found on Dish, and he's a member of the Football Writers Association of America. So, Joe Lisi, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well, Mike. Saturday morning, getting ready for the NFL draft. Doesn't get better than this, does it?
No. It's good stuff, and obviously we've seen a lot of moves by teams trying to maneuver to get up towards the top of the draft. I think you and I are going to be doing a show with Rich Sciarminello in a few days, and we're going to have a lot of fun with our mock draft because we're going to go best player available. But clearly there's a lot of teams maneuvering picks around. We saw the Brandon Cooks trade earlier this week with the Patriots. They moved to number 23 overall. And to talk about them a little bit, you and I and Rich were shooting notes back and forth, like, what could this mean? Are they going to package both picks and move up for a quarterback to back up Tom Brady? I don't really see it that way. I think the Patriots are going to try to do the best player available with their top five picks, which were all in the top 100. And I'm thinking, because of this Gronk drama, they could be looking at a tight end. So you see any of these tight end prospects fitting well in a Patriots system?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting format. We have to see what Bill Belichick and the Patriots do from an offensive perspective. The one guy that I would say that would fit New England's type of system, I like Mark Andrews from Oklahoma. I really think he's a hybrid type of tight end. From a body standpoint, he needs to add about maybe 15 to 20 pounds to get up to Gronk's size. But I think from a red zone perspective and giving Tom Brady another option, he stands about 6'5", 6'6". He can play the slot. You can match him up on linebackers and nickelbacks. And I think that's the opportunity for a guy like Mark Andrews at the tight end position to really mimic what Gronk has done in New England. Now, is he a run-blocking tight end? No, but he can add 15 to 20 pounds and be utilized in that scheme over a period of time. So it's going to be an interesting draft, to say the least, and I'm really curious to see what Bill Belichick and the staff does in this upcoming draft.
You know, Joe, with that move that the Patriots made, there was some talk, and it would take them a lot to get in position to draft Josh Rosen, but there was some talk that they like him and it could be a guy that they may see if they can actually land on draft night. Do you think that that could be a good fit for Rosen? There's obviously a lot made about his personality and things of that nature. Do you think that Rosen could be a good fit on-field and off-field for New England?
Well, I mean, there's no denying that Josh Rosen is one of the most intriguing quarterbacks in this draft from a physical attribute. He possesses the arm strength. If it was a 7-on-7 drill, I think there's no doubt Josh Rosen would be one of the top quarterbacks drafted for 2018. Here's the thing that I think a lot of people miss when they look at Josh Rosen overall. I mean, since he stepped on the field in week one in 2015 against Virginia, he threw for 320 yards. He hasn't elevated his teammates around him to the next level. I mean, you're talking about a UCLA team last year that was 0-6 on the road. With Josh Rosen, they were 0-4 on the road. They did not win a bowl game with Josh Rosen at the quarterback position there. And he didn't elevate his game to the next level since he stepped on the field in UCLA during his freshman season. Everybody wants to make the correlation to Tom Brady in college. Tom Brady was 20-5 as a starting quarterback, splitting time with Drew Henson in Ann Arbor. There's no comparison, in my opinion. And quite honestly, Rich and I feel the same way. Josh Rosen is just an overvalued quarterback at this point in the NFL draft.
Do you think that Jim Mora's comments about Rosen, stating that Cleveland might not be a good fit for him and culture is important to him, are doing him a disservice? Because I'm actually of the opinion that Mora is saying the right things about Josh and saying that if things are going to be, he questions a lot of things. So if he's going to go into a culture that says, shut up, just listen to me, I know what I'm doing, he's going to struggle with that. Like, he needs an offensive coordinator that he can hash things out with because he's very thoughtful and he's a smart kid. So do you think that those are doing him a disservice or helping him because he might find a better fit?
I think anytime you have a coach, Mike, that gives negative opinions or I want to say negative criticism or feedback to a prospective draft player, especially when you coach that player, it's not going to help his draft status for some NFL teams. Now, other NFL teams might look at that and say, okay, we can cultivate that talent and take it to the next level, and he just needs the right system. But I don't know what Josh Rosen feels about the game of football. That's the one thing. I mean, he's been very outspoken and very outspoken about the game, but I haven't seen that translate to the field. And that's the one thing that when you look at the quarterback position outside of arm strength, you want to see the intangibles from that player. Can he lead his team? Can, when there is adversity, can he take him to the next level? Yes, he led the comeback against Texas A&M where they were down by almost 30 points. But they shouldn't have been down by that many points to start. I mean, it was because of Josh Rosen's play in the early part of that game why they fell behind by such a score. So I haven't seen that translate to the next level outside just the statistics. And for me, that's why I think out of both quarterbacks, I like Sam Darnold over Josh Rosen because of the intangibles and because of his winning capability.
Joe, let me ask you something, though, to the point of coaches' comments on their players after they leave, because one of the more intriguing stories I thought last year was Brian Kelly pretty much poo-pooing all over Kizer as he was entering the draft process, openly saying he wasn't ready, he should have come back. I'm just curious for you, as obviously someone who's so plugged into what is happening throughout college football, do you feel like when these coaches talk about these players that overall it is a disservice? I mean, how much do you think that these NFL teams are taking what these guys are saying and using it as absolute gospel? I'm curious what you think just kind of about that kind of, I guess, theme maybe that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think anytime a coach is disgruntled, you have to look at where it's coming from. I think when you look at Brian Kelly's tenure at Notre Dame there, he's had quarterback issues. And as soon as an issue does arise with Malik Zaire and DeShone Kizer, he's quick to pull the plug on the starting quarterback. But that being said, when you look at DeShone Kizer in 2016, you're talking about a quarterback that was 4-8 overall as a starting quarterback for Notre Dame, a team that did recruit top 20 talent and had better talent than some of the teams that they played on their schedule. And DeShone Kizer could not elevate his play or his teammates to an above 500 record. I think the one thing that you look at from a quarterback perspective, from college to the pro, what translates more than any other thing is his ability to win in a tough environment, especially on the road. If a quarterback cannot win on the road in college, it's going to be very difficult to elevate his game on the next level. And that's the one intangible that I look at more than anything else. Can a quarterback win on the road in college, and can he elevate his teammates around them, especially when adversity hits? That's the one thing I look at outside of the statistics.
So this is Joe Lisi. You can find him on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. GoForTheTwo.com is his website. He's a college analyst here. He does college football today with Rich Giamanello. Both of us will be on with Rich Giamanello this upcoming Wednesday as we get through our mock draft, which has been pretty wild thus far. Joe, it's been crazy. People are gonna probably scrunch their eyebrows at some of our picks, but we're trying to do best player available, the players that we would take, not the teams, not us trying to predict who the teams will take. I mean, none of us are NFL insiders, so we're not talking. I'm not talking to GMs and that kind of stuff. I'm just trying to get a sense of fantasy value and where I'd like to see certain players. We are drafting defensive players, so we have to account for that. You know, I just had a draft for Washington, and I felt like they needed a safety, so I took one there. But you'll see some of the quarterbacks slide maybe a little bit, and it'll be fun to see where they land, including to who Joe's Dolphins got. So in any event, my one question, I'll give you a chance to pat yourself on the back. Do you get a sense of, during this process, a player that you see starting to rise up draft boards that you're like, finally, somebody has been listening to me. I've been touting this guy all along, and he'll find himself in a better position than maybe you thought 90 days ago?
Well, the one player I've been high on, Mike, and throughout the year has been Georgia's Sony Michel. I mean, he's really elevated his game. I mean, him and Nick Chubb were two dynamic running backs throughout the year. I think when you look at Sony Michel, outside his performance, obviously within the college football playoff and in that game against Alabama, it's his ability to catch the football out of the backfield and his ability to be utilized on the slot in against nickelbacks and linebackers. And when you look at the NFL game now, especially in the Super Bowl, you see Corey Clement from Philadelphia be utilized in the short to intermediate passing game. You see James White and Deion Lewis for New England, and obviously Alvin Kamara burst onto the scene last year with Drew Brees. It's going to be that type of running back, in my opinion, that really, from a fantasy value perspective, and more importantly, from an NFL draft perspective, that really could take a team to the next level. And when you look at the running backs, obviously Saquon Barkley fits that mold, but he'll be taken in the top five. Sony Michel, to me, is the guy that really has a huge upside. Some are talking about first-round draft pick, but I really feel like I picked the other day, I think he could be a great fit for Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. His ability to put pressure on defenses on the perimeter could be a very intriguing draft pick in a couple of weeks.
We're talking Sony Michel top 15, because I do you think that's one of the things, as you guys are preparing through the mock draft, a lot of people kind of have had, I think, difficulty plugging where these running backs are exactly going to fall. Everyone feels like Saquon's a top three player, but he might not even be able to stay in the top five because of the quarterback run. People have Geis as a top 15 player, but because of what teams need, he might not be able to crack the top 20. And then there are people like yourself who really love Sony Michel, certainly one of their first 32 prospects, but again, team needs, it could see him out of the first round. So is this a scenario where you think that the talent of guys like Barkley, Geis, and Michel will prevail and they'll all be able to get themselves, say, within the top 20?
Yeah, I think for me, I think there's no doubt that Sony Michel is a top 15 talent. Obviously, Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis are there as well. I think for me, though, when you break down Sony Michel against Darius Geis, is Geis hasn't been utilizing the short to intermediate passing game, playing with LSU quarterback Danny Etling and a new offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, there. So he's more of a running between the tackles type of runner, a workhorse in that capacity. Hasn't been really utilized in the short to intermediate passing game because of the offensive scheme that he played in. But when you look at the NFL and the evolution of the NFL now, especially with third down running backs and their ability and two back systems for many teams, Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, and how they were able to just come onto the scene and just have a dynamic offense again, that opens up the passing game for more wide receivers. And that's why I think that you'll see Sony Michel creep into the top 20, in my opinion. I think when you look at the quarterbacks as well, Lamar Jackson, to me, is the best quarterback in this draft from a physical attribute perspective. And he deserves to be taken in the first round. Whether that happens because of GMs and stereotypes and everything else, that's what I think separates the NFL GMs and scouts as opposed to the guys that watch these players in college. In terms of Rich and I, we watch them each and every week. If Joe Webb from UAB is still playing in the NFL, and that's not a knock, it's just that Joe Webb was not a dominant quarterback in the NFL. If he's still collecting a paycheck, there's no reason why Lamar Jackson and Quentin Flowers shouldn't be thought of as NFL first-round draft picks.
Joe, if I can just quickly follow up on something with Michel, just to kind of gauge how high you're on him, because you're obviously, it's the ability to affect games in the passing game. How close would you compare the prospect, not what we saw from McCaffrey year one, but coming into the draft, Michelle to McCaffrey? Are you higher on McCaffrey still than Michelle? And if so, how close is the gap? Or would you prefer Michelle, just the prospect coming out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm higher on Michelle. I mean, I was never high on Christian McCaffrey being a dominant runner. I'm sorry. I think when you look at Christian McCaffrey's performances, his senior season coming out of Palo Alto against the better teams on his schedule, he didn't dominate the competition. He struggled against Oregon. He rushed for under 100 yards against Notre Dame, didn't elevate his game against some of the better teams on their schedule like he did against mediocre competition. When you look at Sony Michelle, physical attributes, what can he do with the football? That's where I look at. And you can go back to that freshman season when he played against South Carolina and they had offensive coordinator Mike Bobo there. They utilized him like Reggie Bush back in the day in the slot. They got away from that because Mike Bobo became the head coach at Colorado State. But he's the guy that recruited Sony Michel and utilized him to the best of his ability. When you look at an NFL team, he's going to have to go to the right fit. But I think Green Bay is a perfect fit with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, his ability in the short to intermediate passing game could really make Green Bay's offense explosive.
Good stuff from Joe Lisi. Again, you can find him on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. He's a college football analyst on Fantasy Sports TV, Dish TV, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. He and I will be doing a special on Wednesday, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network NFL Mock Draft Special. Joe, thanks for having us. Enjoy the weekend.
Anytime, Mike. Love the show.
Cool. So we'll come back. Kevin and I will wrap up, comment on what Joe had to say right after this. If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product. Back on Fantasy Sports Today, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're going to be talking NFL right now for this segment. And before I do that, I want to let you know what the schedule looks like for today. And that is going to be after. So we're here till 12 in this league with Welsh and the Bogman. And Bogman. Is it the Bogman or Bogman? I'm sorry. I'll find out. Get back to you on that. That's from 12 to 3. And then weekend fantasy update with Joe Galina and Tony Sincotta from 3 to 6. Tony's going to join us at 11:40 to go over the news of the day. He's Masters and UFC and his commentary about Italian-Americans I heard on that read was interesting. So I'll have to ask him about that. He's Italian-American himself, but he's somehow puts himself as a second-class citizen. But in any event, that's where we're at for now. I will say that if you're playing DFS, Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. There's flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single-entry contests only. Fantasy Factor has always has fun contests going on, and this year Fantasy Factor is running a $100,000 home run derby. Simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. So, there we go. So we talked a little bit with Joe Lisi. I sent you over the mock draft, Kevin, but don't talk about it because I want to tease a little bit. Joe gave a little bit of a tease that he put Sony Michel really high in this draft. I don't think that's ultimately going to happen, but I will say that last year, the book on the draft going into round one was that draft was defense heavy, and we're going to see a whole, like, when will Mitch Trubisky go? Will he go, like, 9 or 13? And that's kind of what it was. And then the Bears just blew up the entire thing. And they picked Trubisky second. They traded way too much for him to move up one spot. Had the Niners just rooked them into doing that. And then we had three wide receivers drafted in the top 10. Nobody suspected that that was going to happen. It might have been one receiver in the top 10, maybe Trubisky in the top 10, and then that all unfolded. So things could get a little wild here. I think this draft will be a series of trades. The Bills at 12 probably need to move up, although in our mock draft, they didn't have to, which was kind of an interesting change. So, you know, things change a little bit. The first two picks were not that surprising, but it, you know, when Saquon Barkley ended up going and when some of the quarterbacks, how they fell and who got picked in front of whom, that's how it got a little wild. So it'll be fun. It'll be a good listen, a good watch.
I look forward to it. I'll make sure I'll tune in. I will say that is honestly one of my favorite points that you made. It was kind of just a reminder even to myself, because you know I like to go through the mock draft practice as well, is how last year those three wide receivers going in the top nine was such a surprise. And I wonder if, you know, does Darius Geis get into the top 10, right? There was a report that the Niners had him as their number one running back, higher than Barkley. If that's the case, then maybe they do take him. I know they paid McKinnon, but if you think of a guy that highly, maybe they take him. Do we see Calvin Ridley get into the top 10? Because by all accounts, this is an incredibly weak wide receiver class. So if the gap between Ridley is he's the only first-round wide receiver on your big board, then maybe he's worth a top 10 pick if all of the other wide receivers don't crack first-round grades for the way you've graded out these players. So those kind of surprises to me are certain things that I am really, really excited to see here. Not to, you know, give anything away, but because I won't even say how far along you guys are, but I've noticed right now Connor Williams isn't off the board. This is a guy that people thought could go top five, and this isn't a reflection of you guys, and I know that you're going also what you would do, not what you think will happen, but I've seen Williams fall back now, in part too, because people are wondering if this guy's an offensive guard. This draft, and I don't know, you mentioned this point before, it's like every year something comes around and we go, this is the craziest it's ever been. We do it with the NFL season, we'll do it with March Madness, and we'll do it with draft years, but this specific draft, because I think of the quarterback position and how that is going to leave everything in limbo, all of the things surrounding it are also just going to make this such an interesting process to follow, because it is going to be probably one of the more unpredictable drafts, I would say, in recent memory.
Yeah, look, the Giants at 2, the Browns at 4, the Colts at 6, all those picks are up for sale.
Yeah.
Bottom line, those picks are for sale. You could argue, now that the Broncos have Keenum, if they feel like they need to backfill the roster more, that they could sell. You know, like if the Bills, let's just say, I don't know, let's just say the Giants stayed where they were and didn't take a QB. The Jets will take a QB. And then the Browns, yeah, nobody gives them the price that they want, so they take a defensive back. Then the Broncos, the Bills are panicking, right? Because, you know, a couple QBs have gone off the board. Then the Bills could trade with the Broncos, and the Broncos could get 2 first-round picks out of that. So it's not inconceivable the Broncos pick is up for sale. If I were the Colts, I'd try to get a boatload for, especially if there's a quarterback left there. If I were the Colts, I'd just be calling all 30 teams, seeing if they want to move up to take Bradley Chubb or whomever else is there. If Barkley's there, you know.
Let me float this by you, right? Because there, I think your opinion for the longest has been Darnold wins out the draft process. He goes 1, and mm-hmm. that seemed like yep. it was set. And then all of a sudden, there now are the rumblings that they're going to take Josh Allen. If that is the case, right? If they're going to take Josh Allen, the Browns have to swap 1 and 2 with the Giants, right? Because I strongly believe the report that the Giants are all the way in on Sam Darnold. Like, you have to get whatever extra assets come from a 1-2 swap if you're going to be taking Josh Allen. Because the thing is, even if the Giants somehow duped you and they jumped ahead of you and took Josh Allen, they're still clearly high on Sam Darnold. To me, if your quarterback grades are that close, and they can get actually that type of haul from a 1-2 swap, I just feel like, especially if you're going to be taking Josh Allen, you have to make a swap with the Giants, don't you?
Yeah, let me address the duping part. If you're in the business of doing business in the NFL, then you have to have an honest conversation about what that's going to be. Hey, John Dorsey, it's Dave Gettleman. I need to move up to take our guy, because I need to make sure that that's there. Who are you interested in? He's like, well, yeah, we really are looking at Darnold, but we would settle on Allen if, you know, we got some assets from you and you really wanted to take Darnold. I think that just has to be an honest conversation, not like hemming and hawing or whatever. What the Browns can do is push this negotiation right up to draft night and make the Giants think that they're really torn. Like, they really do like Darnold better. But if you give them a good enough deal, they like Allen enough that they can do it. I think that's what I would say about the duping component. Now, go back to what was your greater question about it, that the Giants have to make that move?
Well, not as much so as it's more so that the Browns, if the Browns aren't going, I strongly believe the report that the Giants are all the way in on Darnold. So if you're as the Browns are going to take anyone.
I think that's their favorite QB too.
If the Browns are taking anyone that is not Sam Darnold, I feel like they have to go back to two. Like, to me, the Giants are going to be willing to move up to one. Apparently they've already made that phone call. So I feel like you have to entertain that. I'd like to float by you one other mock trade that I've come up with and just kind of your take on it, because last week you weren't here and the Odell Beckham stuff kind of escalated, I felt like, to a point that when we talked about it a while back, it's gone to a new level. Hypothetical trade.
I've always thought cooler heads were going to prevail there, but I'm starting to doubt that now.
I think one of the things that really pushed it was the fact that Schefter predicted he will get moved, and what he predicted it would be for. It was for a first and third or fourth. To me, that's like, it's so easily topped and that's so easily worth it. But here's the projected trade. Just your thoughts. Browns and Giants swap 1 and 2. Browns come away with Odell Beckham. The Browns will also then send first pick of round 2, next year's first rounder. Who do you feel would say no? Or would they both go for that deal?
So the Giants will end up with Darnold, whoever they is there at 33. And then next year's one?
Right. And the Browns end up with the second pick and Odell Beckham Jr.
You understand what the Browns wide receiving core will be, right?
The best in the NFL by far?
The most talented in NFL history?
Yeah.
It would be Josh Gordon, Odell Beckham, and Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry, the owner of the most receptions of all time through 4 seasons. You know who had the most receptions in NFL history through 3 seasons? It was a tie. Do you know who those two players were?
So I would assume.
Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. They'd be teammates. So, and they were teammates at LSU. So,
and you know you'd have the hot take artist saying Gordon's the best receiver of the bunch.
Yeah, I'm done with the hot take guy. Like, I get it. If he was the best receiver, he would be proving it already. I get how talented he is. I'm pulling for him because he's honest about his struggles with addiction and depression. So I can appreciate that. And I think it took him a while to get to this place. But I'm always going to root for guys like that. Are they dependable? Nah, I mean, that's a different discussion. But, you know, I'm pulling for him. And, you know, I would be pulling for Odell to, like, get his stuff together. I mean, it's amazing what the opportunity that's in front of Odell is in New York. And it's, you know, it's flittering away, unfortunately. It's a bummer too, because people really did like him when he first got here, and he could have turned it around if he wanted to, but we'll see. So I think both teams make that trade.
I think, see, that's
because the Giants set themselves up for the future, and the Browns can become more of a win now team. But I guess you're just, you know, and they just get whoever, Josh Rosen or Josh Allen at 2.
And I think too, I mean, an underrated part of this would, if it were to go this way, is the ability to have the very first 2 picks in round 2, where teams are constantly looking to trade up for guys that for no reason fell out of, you know, round 1, or the ability to jump back into round 1 with ease if there are guys then making a slip into the 20s. I think it would be so valuable for the Giants. And honestly, if they were to have one take their quarterback of the future with 33, 34 next year's Browns asset and even their own first, I mean, they can do a number of things to actually shore up that offensive line. Like, they might, I mean, losing Odell Beckham is going to set them back without a doubt, but they'd be able to, you know, bolster their roster in a lot of ways that they're currently not going to be able to do at 2, regardless if they even do a trade back with the Bills. So to me, it's an interesting thing.
I mean, the trading with the Bills would obviously net them a lot, and they'd be able to keep Odell. But again, if they're in love with Darnold, that's what creates this conundrum, right? It doesn't surprise me at all that Sam Darnold is the guy that they want. That is a Giants guy. It just is. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's hard to for anybody that's an NFL fan. You get it. Like, mm-hmm. certain teams have a certain way about them. I'm a Steelers fan. I know how that goes, and people thumb their noses at it because the Giants are thumbing their noses at everybody, the Giants way and all this kind of stuff. And frankly, that's been tarnished in the last couple of years, whether it's Beckham or the way they treated Eli or the Josh Brown situation. There's a lot of things that people can point, like, hey, man, you guys are just like everybody else, blue blood and Wellington Mara, and you've been around forever and championships and all that. You got plenty of problems in your own, plenty of skeletons in your own closet. So I understand that, but they still have a way of doing things. And Dave Gettleman has worked in that building, despite the fact that he departed for Carolina for a few years. Dave Gettleman's worked in that building a really long time, and he knows the quote-unquote Giant way. And Sam Darnold's that guy. He just is. You know, they wouldn't take – I can see them taking Rosen because he's a thoughtful guy. But Josh Allen and Baker, no, those are not their guys. It's just not who they go for. But – I still think they need Quentin Nelson more than anything in the short term.
Right.
This will be defined by trades. And so many of those picks are up for sale. You know, mm-hmm. what if it gets to, let's say, Darnold and Allen and Rosen are off the board. Those mm-hmm. are the three that go off the board, just like that. Darnold, Allen, because of your trade, and then Rosen to the Jets. Somebody's going to freak out. Mm-hmm. The Bills are going to freak out and then they'll be calling the Browns and the Broncos and the Colts because they need Lamar Jackson or Baker. I feel like Baker's going to get left out in all this now. For a while there, I thought it was him to the Jets. Now I feel like the Jets might like Josh Rosen, but
I think the Jets are Rosen or Mayfield. To me, this whole thing is four of the first five. Wouldn't be shocked if the first four feel like it's going to be quarterback to me. I strongly believe that. And I'm going to ask you every single week until the draft, and I will ask you again on draft night.
No, you are.
Six quarterbacks round one. Are we there yet or no?
I got five. It won't shock me if somebody trades back in to take Rudolph, because Rudolph met with the Patriots this week. He met with, I think he had another team that he was meeting with as well, but he definitely met with the Pats, and I think he was maybe going to I can't remember the other team, but in any event, he worked out for the Pats, and you know, there's a lot of
do you think
subterfuge and smoke screens and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's another component here. I know people are going to be like, this doesn't matter, but Kevin Hogan got traded to Washington. He'll probably be battling out for Washington's backup. By the way, he's from Washington, D.C., so that's kind of fun.
Homecoming that everyone's been waiting for.
Gonzaga Prep High School, which is a high school where many of my friends attended. It's a sort of a pipeline to Boston College. So in any event, those guys were all rooting for him at Stanford and all that kind of stuff. So now he's back in his hometown. The Browns QB room continues to change, and it's just going to be Tyrod Taylor and whoever they add, basically.
Would you say
– you know, they got rid of Kaiser and Kessler and Hogan. So
say five QBs within the first 15 picks. Does that feel too high or fair?
Let me take a look.
Because I'm now looking
five
at
five in the top 15.
And I feel like the Dolphins looking quarterback, and so are the Cardinals. I think the Pats are going to take those assets and move up, whether it be for a quarterback or just a prospect that they really love. I don't think that
the
Patriots
five in the
make
top
two
15.
Picks.
I think five in the top 15 happens. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So then,
seven? I'll give you one tease. Our mock draft, we have five in the top 15. Seven in the first round.
What do you think? Should we keep pumping that number up, Mike?
No. Who's the seven? Who's seven? Kyle Lauletta?
Yeah. Well, him, Falk. I don't know. Me. Maybe they'll grab me early. Why not?
No.
I could still sling it, I think.
These teams got to tap the brakes. If that happens, then the smart drafting teams are going to crush it this year because they won't be overdrafting guys like that. They're going to have blue chip defensive prospects, especially defensive backs, falling to them. I was listening to Mel Kiper yesterday. He thinks there's going to be a run on cornerbacks in the second round. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where the value is going to start to stack up. So you got to be mindful of that. So I've got a Gronk poll just put up. I want you all to vote. And it's, when will Gronk's Patriots career end? Before this season, after this season, or after the 2019 season? We'll come back, talk about Gronk and all the stories related to him on Fantasy Sports Today. It's Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. We'll be back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Nice. What's up with Pete Considori? Going with a little Saturday Night Fever? Good stuff. Really mixed it up on this one. Yeah. We're going to bring Pete in. We're going to bring Pete in the next hour to talk about hockey, because the end of the hockey season is upon us. The end of the basketball season is upon us, too. We'll talk about that stuff in hour number three. But we're talking NFL at the moment. I mentioned before the break that we have a poll up. And the poll is as follows. I want to make sure I get it exactly right. And it's, when will Gronk's Patriots career end? You can find that on at FNTSY Radio. You can go to my Twitter feed at Mike Blewett, or Kevin's at the Kevin Walsh as well. But will it be before week one this season, before week one next season, or after the 2019 season? Early leader in the clubhouse is after the 2019 season. So people think this is going to be water under the bridge. I'm starting to think that maybe this is the swan song. Mm. And I don't even know if it gets there. I think, though, that in reading some stories, there is notable frustration from Patriots players. I think the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick tension is real, and they apparently had a meeting recently to kind of work through it, and it's not all the way there yet. I think the Malcolm Butler move was disappointing to a lot of players. Like, they're going to the guys that are going to be there for a long time, like Devin McCourty, they're just going to say, you know what, it's Bill's decision, and we respect that, and we've got to move on. But Malcolm Butler was a guy that did a lot for that team, and his teammates are like, man, he just got treated badly like that. And Butler's even said the right things for the most part afterwards. So he's been professional about it. But Bill made a decision. They lost a close game against the Eagles in the Super Bowl, and I think some of those players are disappointed about that fact. So I said all of that to set up the fact that, you know, I don't think Gronk is in Bill's good graces and vice versa anymore. And they could just trade him this year and be done with it, draft a tight end in the first round. However, would that damage Bill Belichick's reputation with the players even more so?
I'm going to say a thing. It's a dumb thing to say, and I probably do this far too often. I don't feel great about what the Pats have done this offseason, and it makes me feel not super high on them going into next year. Now, they're still going to win the AFC East easily because the division is in shambles. But ultimately, like, I don't think it's going to be as smooth sailing as they're used to. And they'll probably go 15-1, and we'll play this back and I'll be laughed at, which is fine. But I said that this season is going to be his last year. I just don't see him sticking around for it. Like, I don't know if it's going to be all there to keep him around. I think actually someone who replied to it was, when Tom goes, it's a fair point. I do think the longer Tom is there, it keeps the window open. If Tom were to turn around tomorrow and say, I'm done. I think Gronk might follow suit. But I just, I don't know if Gronk really is going to be all too interested in staying there. And kind of something you mentioned is just like, there is a rift there, I think, between him and Bill a bit. And I think that plays a part. You know, when there were talks about him being traded, which I think is clearly off the table now, the two locations were the Rams and the Niners. And I was having a discussion with George is, you know, does him going to LA make him more at peace? And it allows him kind of to, you know, be in the nice weather and get to do some of his outside things, and he kind of gets best of both worlds? Or does it, it's almost like putting him too close to the sun, and he's like, oh no, I need to do this full time. Because the thing for Gronk, and it doesn't often apply to a lot of players, but Gronk is fine without football. There's a life for him without football, whether he wants to main event WrestleMania or, you know, just do movies or, you know, ads, commercials, whatever it may be. You know, Gronk has a life out of football. So for him to...
Who would blame Gronk for walking away now?
I wonder.
Even now.
I don't even think Patriots fans would be upset with him.
He's taken a beating. He's massive and one of the greatest tight end talent, the greatest tight end talent in the history of the NFL.
Wrong, agree.
And the stats to go with it. So, and Super Bowl rings. So I would get it if he walks away. People would be like, hey, you got the X number of dollars sitting on the table. How could you walk away now? Like, because he's had an ACL injury and multiple back surgeries and four surgeries on his forearm. And he probably feels like hell at the end of the year. And I get why. Look, it is not generally wise for players to make comments in the throes of an injury or at the end of a season. Earl Thomas broke his leg. He wanted to retire 5 minutes later. Ben Roethlisberger lost in the playoffs last year. He wanted to retire.
Right.
Gronk lost in the Super Bowl. He wanted to retire. But what's different about the Gronk thing is that the reporter came to him with a little bit of information, obviously, and Gronk said, where'd you hear that? Which is a telltale sign of, like, you got some accurate information. I want to know who leaked it. So Gronk has obviously been thinking about it, but I don't think anybody was surprised by it. It's just there's a little bit of finality when he says something like that that I think throws people back, and especially Pats fans that are huge fans of his. But I think when he starts to talk about that, Bill Belichick is still old school. I think a guy starts to talk about retirement, Bill's like, I don't want him on the team anymore. He's not committed.
Which is a wild thing to me. Gronk, he's at the point when it comes to health where every time he's hurt, as a fan, not even a Patriots fan, you watch football, you kind of, it's like you worry. It's almost like your heart hurts for the guy, right? Like Carson Wentz got hurt, and it's like, oh man, that really stinks. That stinks for him, his team. But you know, like he'll be back, kind of, right? You start to think about it. For Gronk, it's like, he's one of those guys when he gets injured, like you think about how he looks in 10 years. It's somewhat similar to Derrick Rose. I mean, there are people who crack a lot of jokes on Derrick Rose, but ultimately, you know, when he, if he were to, I don't even want to say, if he were to get hurt tomorrow, you know, you'd be like, man, this guy just never got the break. And Gronk's gotten a lot more breaks in terms of, you know, success, right, that Derrick Rose never got to and things of that nature. It's just, you know, week one, week two, whatever, Gronk comes down with something. It's like, man, like this guy probably should hang it up. And that's kind of where you're at for Gronkowski. So I couldn't blame him. He's had a Hall of Fame career right now. He doesn't have to ever play another down of football to go into the Hall of Fame. He is, as you said, the greatest tight end talent of all time. I don't know what all the numbers look like next to one another, but I'd be willing to say he's the greatest tight end of all time because I know the talent's there, and I feel like the accomplishments are there as well. So ultimately, there's not much left to prove. At this point, it's quality of life, right? Like that's a lot of the reason why these guys do it. And for Gronk, I don't know if he actually needs to play another down of football for his quality of life to be where he wants. Now, if he remains hungry for championships and that's overall what's more important to him than anything, then keep playing. Do your thing. I wish Gronk nothing but the best. I have, you know, he's not one of those guys where, you know, he's looked at as the villain and right? Like there are Dolphins fans and Jets fans and Bills fans that are like, I love Rob Gronkowski. He's one of those guys that can break those barriers. Ultimately, though, if we never see Gronk play another down, good for him. If he plays another 5 years and dominates and never gets hurt again, awesome. Either way, it's fine for me.
It might be that I've gotten older and I have a little bit of a different sensibility about it, but I'm more sensitive to that now. Maybe it's because I have kids and I'm married and I'm an old guy now, but I'm more sensitive to guys that are like, you know, I've met some older football players. It's not always pleasing to the eye. Do you know what I mean? some of these guys are struggling. I used to work at a sports marketing firm years ago, and we would do these autograph signings, and I would see the 68 Jets walking around. It didn't look like a lot of fun. I'm just being totally honest, and that it always stuck with me. That's 15 years ago that I'm pulling something from. So if a guy that's 30, well, how old is Gronk now? Is he 30 yet? He's probably 30.
I'll get it up as you continue to make your point.
So if a guy ends up having a 9-year NFL career and can walk away from it now, I feel okay for him. Like,
turns 29 in May, though.
Wow, it's crazy. All right, so he's 29 for this NFL season.
Yeah.
So, and when Tony Romo walked away, like some people were like, ah, it's nice of you to spend Tony Romo's money. He's going to get paid $20 million bucks. I'm like, I know. But he got paid four to not break his back again. So that's a pretty good deal. It's a pretty good backup plan when you've already made $100 million. I'm not telling people to walk away, but I'm like a little, there's a sense of relief in my eyes that like, the funny part about Gronk is he's impossible to tackle, but it takes a Herculean effort on the part of the team to get him down. So he's taking shots from two, three players a lot of times, dragging their butts all over the field. And that takes a toll. He takes extra shots every time he catches the ball because he's so hard to get down.
He's always used as a blocker.
Who can
as
cuss
well?
Him? Who can cuss him in that late in season game? Somebody took a huge shot at him. Was it in the Jaguars game? Yeah, it was in the Jaguars in the AFC Championship game.
Was it Gibson?
Yeah, that sounds right to me. But no.
Yeah, because they said that if
the guy
the Super
that used to play for the Cowboys, the guy, Barry Church.
Oh, Barry
Barry
Church. Yeah, because they said that if the Super Bowl was the next week,
Gronk,
he would have missed the game.
He absolutely would have. And he was cleared 10 days later. And, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get into the whole concussion protocol thing. But, you know, like that's kind of what it takes to get him down. And like people on Twitter are like, yeah, it's worth the flag if Gronk goes out. I'm like, that's rough. Like that's what it's taking to knock him down. And I'm not suggesting Barry Church intentionally concussed him, but you know, they took the hit, they took the flag, and I think they were happy to have Gronk out for the rest of the game. So it just takes such a Herculean effort. I have some sympathy for guys that are getting older in the league. I don't suggest older as old as me, but older in the league and want to walk away and spend time and have a family and not be crippled in some way or another for the rest of their lives. So let me get to another story. We belabored the Gronk thing. I'll update you on the poll later. So go to the poll again at FNTSY Radio. When do you think Gronk's Patriots career will end? Before week one this year, before week one next year, or after the 2019 season? So those are the three options. Cam Meredith, him coming off the ACL injury, 2 years removed from being the Bears' leading receiver, has signed a 2-year offer sheet with the Saints. He was given an original round tender by the Bears last month, guaranteeing him a 1-year deal worth $1.907 million if he returns. That tender enabled him to seek outside offers, however. And had they placed a second-round tender on him for an extra $1 million in 2018, other teams likely would have been dissuaded by the compensation. So the Saints have an offer out there. He caught 66 for $888 in 2016. He's been he's a guy that was an undrafted free agent. They declined to give him $2.91 million for 2018. I think it's likely that that offer is higher. So considering how the Bears have rebuilt this receiving core, they're still hanging on to Kevin White because he's not really a valuable asset in the trade market. They signed Allen Robinson for big money. They got Taylor Gabriel here. Beyond that, backing them up, Josh Bellamy, DeMarcus Ayers, a bunch of guys. But Cam Meredith, when he comes back, would make that pretty dynamic. So they got Trey Burton there now as a tight end, along with Deion Sims and Adam Shaheen. So you think they let Meredith walk here and he becomes a part of the Saints?
I mean, I think fantasy-wise, you'd probably rather see him become part of the Saints just because it's Drew Brees. But I think the Bears could use him. I mean, at the end of the day, kind of their plan in free agency was continue to throw options at the wide receiver position. And they did that with Robinson, Gabriel, bringing in Burton and things of that nature. But I don't think that they're now at a luxury to where they can just simply let Meredith slide by. It's not as if he would be a waste for their team, right? And at least there's some rapport between him and Trubisky.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose that's arguable, but he didn't really have much. It was all off-season stuff last year. So let's see. I'm just trying to look up this. I'm just trying to look up some more stuff. The Saints are signing Bears wide receiver to a two-year deal worth $9.6 million plus incentives, $5.4 million in guarantees. So Chicago's not going to match that.
No, probably not. I guess maybe it's more the hindsight.
They have $24 million in 2018 dedicated to other wide receivers. They're not going to match that. So let's focus on his potential with the Saints. Michael Thomas.
Is he wide receiver
Ted Ginn,
two for them?
Willie Snead, Cameron Meredith. That's your top four. Yeah, I think they develop him into being the number two opposite Michael Thomas. Because Willie Snead was an afterthought last year. Mm-hmm. They barely used him. It surprised me in some ways. You know, he had a suspension, and maybe that was part of it, and he was in the doghouse, but I think they're planning long-term. They got, well, at least for the next couple of years, you know, they take a reasonable risk on Cam Meredith because he's coming off an ACL. But if he's the Cam Meredith that he was a couple of years ago, Michael Thomas and Cam Meredith will be tough to stop. And you got Ted Ginn and Willie Snead as veteran wide receivers in there, along with Brandon Coleman. That's a powerful wide receiving attack from a team that's actually shifted away from the pass in since 2016 when Cam Meredith was last playing. The last year, obviously, they really shared the ball around a lot more with Ingram and Kamara, and this would make them, I mean, from a skill set position standpoint, they might be at the top of the food chain again.
Yeah, they'd be up there. It is crazy to watch the NFC stack up the way that it is, and you just kind of look over at the AFC. I mean, that's why right there I was like, I'm not super high on the path, but at no point would I contemplate them losing their division. And honestly, even if I don't love everything they've done, they're still, I don't think you could make an argument for two teams being better than them in the AFC. Just, it's crazy to watch the difference in the two conferences. It is. I know we're going to talk NBA basketball. It feels very Eastern Conference versus Western Conference right now. The NFC is.
A little bit. I'm watching some shows like, can the Lions make the playoffs? And you start rattling off the teams. Like, are they better than the Rams, or are they better than the Falcons, or the
best
Vikings,
team in their own division,
or the Eagles, or you're like, no, they probably can't, because there's eight teams better than them on paper, maybe nine, and it's not even disrespect to the Lions.
Would the Lions be favored to finish at least second in every AFC division?
AFC North, they're probably better than those teams. AFC South, you know, it's funny. AFC South is like the division that's on the move in the NFL, because the Jags were pretty good, and then the Titans are getting better. So I wouldn't guarantee them the South. The West, they'd be behind the Chiefs. Sure, I'll give them that. They battle it out with the Raiders. And then in the East, they just finish behind the Pats. So, yeah. So, there you go. That's my take on the Lions. If they were in the AFC, they're pretty good. They'd be pretty good. They make the playoffs. So, but what they're not going to do, probably, is make the playoffs in the NFC.
I know we're about to hit this break quickly. Cooks or Watkins next year, as of today?
Cooks. Can't believe in Sammy Watkins anymore.
I think that's fair.
Not until he proves me wrong. But I think that's a fair debate. And I could waffle as we go forward into hour number three on this show. So we're going to talk a lot of different stuff. We'll do some NHL, UFC, NBA, Masters. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. We're back after this.